I always had my phone out when Olivia was born. Always taking photos. Right. I feel lucky now because I've got 1,800 photos of my daughter. Okay. She was alive for 6 weeks.
The Still Parents podcast is proudly supported by Global's Make Some Noise. Click details in the description to find out more.
Let's do this. Hope you're doing okay. I'm Dan. I'm here, as always, with Ryan and Matt from the Lily May Foundation. How are you, gents?
Fine, thanks.
Yeah, you okay there, Matt?
All good. Yeah, thank you.
Fantastic. So we are back and we've got another special guest who's joining us in the studio. And a very warm welcome to Liam Tier. Am I saying that correct?
Yeah, Liam Tier. Yeah.
All right. How are you, sir?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for joining us. Where have you come in from?
Just near Leicester.
Liam's very well put together, I think.
You mean he's got a head, two arms and two legs?
No, she's quite a star. I've got flip-flops on and socks tonight.
A shit top as well.
My top, man. It's quite a nice top.
It needs to be a Forest top, doesn't it?
Liam, who's your team then?
Yeah, Forest fan.
You're a Forest fan?
Yeah, Forest fan.
Living in Leicester?
You're living in Leicester, yeah.
I bet you enjoyed last season then.
Absolutely. No, I love it.
I was learning just before we went live on this tonight, you were also, I'm not sure if you still are, but a very, very keen and competitive and successful swimmer.
Yeah, I was, yeah. I'm not now. I think I need some armbands now, but I was, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
absolutely. Did it for about 15 years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
My eyes lit up because I often say that was the only sport I was actually half decent at and came in. I was wondering if we'd ever raced against each other because I grew up in a similar area, but I'm like a decade older, so that probably never happened. What was your stroke?
Freestyle. I was more of a long distance swimmer. My claim to fame, though, I did beat Rebecca Adlington actually in Coventry when I was younger, but you know.
Oh yeah, because you'd be around similar ages, wouldn't you?
Yeah, same age, I think. Yeah,
we had Rebecca Adlington on this podcast just before the Olympics 2024.
In fact, she mentioned Liam,
and you
yeah, I remember that guy.
So I lost that guy.
Yeah, don't get on that motherfucker, Liam. Yeah. Oh wow, so that's your claim to fame.
That's my claim to fame.
How often do you use that claim to fame?
Not very much.
Liam, you are here. As we always say, we're happy to have you in, but we're not happy that you had to come in. It's the whole point of this podcast. But to get guys to talk, because we talk a lot, but we often talk a lot of bollocks, as anyone who's been listening to the first few minutes of this particular episode will attest to. But we would like to speak about your loss of, it was Olivia with your other half, Emma.
Emma.
How long have you guys been together?
We've been together 3 years now.
Okay.
Just over. We went to school together. So we've known each other before we got into a relationship, but just didn't see each other for a while.
It happens a lot, that, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Which meant one of you, when you were at school, didn't think the other one was fit. And then after a few years, you went, oh, they've changed. So that's always the word.
That was like me and Amy. Yeah.
You have other children?
Yeah. So Emma had three kids before we got together, and I had two boys myself.
Yeah.
So between us, we've got Abby, Leighton, Connor, Harvey, and Harry. And obviously we had Olivia together.
Yeah. So, Liam, I would like you to take as much time as you need and as much detail as you wish to give about the story leading up to the loss of Olivia, and Matt and Ryan and anyone who's watching the live stream. If I have any questions, they will jump in. So, yeah, Liam, tell us your story.
Yeah, so basically, obviously Emma was pregnant. Pregnancy was going all right. We did have to go to premature prevention clinic throughout the pregnancy due to Emma having premature babies before.
Okay.
I was new to this again.
Had your boys been fairly straightforward?
It was literally, it was just straightforward birth really.
Yeah,
they were fine. So Connor was born premature and he needed to go in intensive care and things like that.
Right.
And same with Harvey.
Okay.
But they were fine. They got discharged and they were fine.
Okay.
Really, really healthy, to be fair.
Very good.
And so that's what I was expecting and things like that. And basically what happened, we was at home one day and Emma said that she had a bit of bleeding. We was going to the midwife anyway, literally the same day. So we said, right, well, we'll pull it up with the midwife, take the tissue with you just in case, I don't know, because we don't know what to do when things like that, you know what I mean? So then the midwife just said, right, we'll just go over to Leicester Hospital, get checked out, and just, you know, it should pretty straightforward. It wasn't that straightforward, to be fair. Emma was then admitted into hospital due to the bleeding, just so they could monitor it, keep an eye on it so it didn't increase or whatever. It didn't really increase, but it didn't stop.
Okay.
It was just little bits throughout. So she was admitted in then for 2 weeks. So at this point, she's 29 weeks now. And the day she was going to get discharged, we seen Emma's sister, because she was on a training day. She's a midwife at the same hospital.
Yeah.
And we was just speaking to her after a training day. And she was saying, look, if you're a bit unsure, just get them to check before you leave.
Yeah.
So we did that. And this was at 5 to 5. And we went back up and we told the doctor on the ward. And they checked her and everything seemed fine. But we're still worried. So we spoke to them. They reassured us. So I was like, right, okay, well, I'll go home, get the kids sorted out for dinner. I'll make sure everything's sorted for when you're back. You have a shower and then I'll come and pick you up in a bit while you're getting things sorted out and getting discharged and things like that. And literally, I got home. It's like a thing off a movie, really. Like, yeah. You know, when you walk in the door and then your phone goes.
Yeah.
But my phone had gone and Emma had sent me a photo of like this blood clot, basically. Rang me panicking, crying, like, look, we're getting moved down because I'm bleeding. Yeah. It's just all coming out in the shower. So I just said to the kids, right, I've got to go and see your mum. At this point, I didn't know what was going on.
Yeah. Up until that point, how much community and clarity had there been as to what might be going on with Emma at that moment?
I couldn't really say, in fairness, what was causing the bleeding. But from their point of view, the cervix was closed, waters hadn't broken. You know, everything's all right. But then, like I said, that was at 5 to 5. I'd probably got home at 5:30, got that message straight away. Yeah. I got straight back over. Olivia was born at 8 o'clock.
Oh, wow.
You know, I had to leave the car outside the front of the hospital, ran up the stairs, honestly, got handed some scrubs and said, you need to go down there. And that was it, really. And we was like angled up to get the drugs working quick enough so they could open. And basically, Olivia was born on an emergency cesarean because Emma had a placenta abruption. We knew that the placenta was low.
Yeah.
But I'll be honest, as a bloke, I ain't got a clue what, I know, you know, the placenta's attached and that feeds the baby.
It comes up so many times, even though you had children before, because until you're in that scenario, why would you know about these things anyway? That experience, that lived experience of it.
Yeah. And then Olivia was born, basically, and she was put straight into a little incubator and taken into another room. And I was lucky I got to go in there in the other room with her. You know, it was scary, though, really scary, because, again, seeing a baby, for me, pregnancy was, you get pregnant, baby comes out, sound beautiful, and then you go home.
Again, like a film, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. But it was just complete opposite. You know, we knew there was going to be issues because she was premature. So she was born at 29 weeks and 2 days.
Yeah.
She weighed £2.13. She was really small.
Wow. Yeah.
So I stayed with her in there for a bit. And then she was taken down to intensive care, neonate intensive care, I think, NICU. Then I was in with Emma, basically, and then we had to wait to go down to see Olivia. Emma had to stay up in the room for, I think it was like 4 hours or something, but she wanted me to go down with her sister, you know, check on her and things like that.
Wow. 4 hours as well would seem like weeks and weeks, wouldn't it, going through that in that moment, because this is all changed within 3 hours of when you left the hospital, give or take, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
it's amazing the amount of times we've spoke to people at it, just that speed of which everything's just flipped on its head.
I was just about to say, because it we've experienced this, where placental abruption and how quickly the medical professionals move, and how if ever there's a definition of teamwork, watch that, because it's quite frightening, actually, how everyone, they all know their own individual jobs, and it's just quite frightening. And you said there that Olivia was £2.13, did you say, at 29 plus 2?
Yeah.
So Bobby was £2.12 at 32 weeks.
Wow.
So
I've been there. I know
yeah.
what it's like at that time because it is stressful, panic, everything.
Yeah, absolutely.
He's just like, geez, what the fuck is going on here sort yeah. of thing, you know.
You're allowed to swear, by the way, Liam.
Yeah, that's fine.
I'm going to touch on this straight away because you've already mentioned how it was, you know, it was scary.
Yeah.
And one of the initial reasons that we started doing this podcast was because of male stereotypes. The one is that, you know, we clam up, we don't talk, or we would talk around the point. I think quite often that may be quite a good thing because it's around all of that nonsense chat, we will get to the point. But also from a stereotype of, and Ryan will say more on this because it's that, I can't fix this. You know, as that stereotype, we are fixers. We want to make it right. We want to get it better. And you're in that situation where there you are and you can't do anything. Where were you mentally in that moment?
Mentally, to be honest, everything was just a whirlwind. You know, you just got to, for me, I was just trying to take every minute as it came, you know, just trusting what people were telling me, you know, just making sure Emma was all right. That was the main thing for me, to be honest, just make sure Emma was all right, you know, as well. Yeah. You know, as much as like it's just said about the stereotypes of blokes, it's what it's like, though, isn't it? You know,
don't
you go into yourself rather than
stereotypes come into existence.
You put yourself,
you're
at the back of everything else. Yeah,
100%.
But I also think that we don't have a choice at that point.
Yeah,
because what are you going to do, right? Are you gonna fold and okay, if you do melt, you melt. That's fine, but actually. There is not. I think it just happens in on autopilot.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think that's literally it. I think you see the people around you that you love so much, like suffering as such, or being unsure. So you think, right? I can't be unsure because if I'm unsure, even if I am unsure inside, I can't show it.
Yeah. I think nowadays, it's like an autopilot.
You know, literally, just like right. You got to kick in, haven't you? As much as you don't know how to kick in, or something just takes over.
But when you're in that situation as well, and I know you'll agree with me here, is everything's moving at a million mile an hour around you, and you're the one that's there trying to reassure. So you're saying you're reassuring, you're making sure everything else is fine. But you're I just remember being like disorientated as well.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So 3 hours after you'd initially been in the Leicester Royal?
Yeah, I was in Leicester Royal, at this point,
Leicester Royal Infirmary. So you'd left, you'd gone back, you found it, and then Olivia was born.
Yeah, so Olivia was born. She went into the NICU and things like that. I can't remember the whole process of it, because to me it was a blur, obviously people are talking to you, and, you know, that's where Emma came in. She's a nurse as well, and she understands like the terminology a lot better than what I do, and especially at the time. But we was in there. She was in there getting, I can't remember what she was getting. I think she was getting the air and things to help breathe. But she was breathing. She was breathing on her own. She was fine. So she came out of there after a couple of days, and she was still put on a special unit, but just not the one down, basically. So she was in there for a few weeks, and she had a cardio scan. A cardiologist came into the Royal and found two holes in the heart, an ASD and a PDA. And he said one of them is common in premature babies. It's just because the heart's not fully developed, but the time due date comes, it should have closed up.
I see.
So it scheduled us in. Before she's discharged, they told her she must have a cardio scan.
Yeah.
After that, you know, another week or so went past, and they moved her over to Leicester General Hospital because she was the youngest baby on the ward, but she was the healthiest and fittest on the ward.
Right.
You know, she was needing NG tube feeding and caffeine and things like that because she was having desaturations.
Yeah.
So again, she was moved over to Leicester General.
Yeah.
And then that was when it like ramped up a little bit then for me and Emma, because you know, you get him, you have to be taught how to do the NG tubing and things like that, so they could have record for when she is discharged, right. So we're like competent at home and things like that. So yeah, when she was in the general, she's still on caffeine and things like that. And yeah, so basically we was in there and she was supposed to, she was breastfeeding at this point now as well, as well as the NG tubes and the caffeine, yeah. To help, just help with the heart and things, yeah. like that. Yeah. And then basically we kept getting told like, oh, you know, potentially could get discharged soon, maybe not. But didn't re- it was like, you know, when they're like testing
helps.
The water with
that
it.
That helps, doesn't it? Maybe. So we was
like,
maybe not.
Yeah, so we was like, okay, that's great. Like from our point of view, you know, that's all we wanted.
So at this moment in time, you were thinking things will...
Yeah.
It's going to go towards
positive...
They
were positive. Stepping in the right direction.
Yeah, everything was. Don't get me wrong. She was still... We was coming in the next morning. Okay. So we was there for about 12 hours a day. Well, 10 to 12 hours. Obviously, we've got other kids and things like that. But we wanted to be there as long as we could be there.
Of course.
You know, actually parent her rather than...
Yeah.
You know, nurses... And I know it's a job, but for us...
Yeah, absolutely.
It's your
job.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, yeah, what... The doctors came around doing the rounds and things like that. And one of the doctors this specific day said, because she had a heart murmur, that's what they were picking up. And then one of the doctors said, oh, there's no murmur. And then another doctor said, no, there is a murmur. But then when once they were speaking to us and Emma said, well, Olivia's having two breastfeeds now, like, and that was their criteria.
Yeah.
Two breastfeeds within 24 hours, you can be discharged.
Okay, right.
That's what we thought.
That's what happened.
So, you know, in our minds, we didn't think that because she'd had a desaturation the day before.
Yeah.
You know, we just thought, right, okay, she's on the caffeine. No, they took her off the caffeine, so she didn't have any desaturations. And then, yeah, they said, right, she can be discharged home. So we was expecting the cardio scan and things like that. So we were trying to push for that.
Okay.
And basically we was told then that that'd get changed into an outpatient appointment within the next 48 hours. So this was Sunday we were speaking to them about this. And then they said to us, come in and room in with us the next day, and then you can take her home with you. So we was buzzing with that.
Yeah,
you know, to us, she was perfect, doing great. You know, they had to go and have the meetings and things to ensure that she was medically fit. Yeah. We was told she was medically fit for discharge. So we was discharged. We were discharged on the 13th of February. We got home quite late. We got home about, I don't know, 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. It was really quite late, actually.
Yeah.
So that was the 13th. And the 14th, we had somebody come out to the house just to check everything was all right.
That was just supposed to be like routine.
Yeah. Health visitor or I can't remember the actual job title. But and so we'd had someone come out that day. And the next day, someone came out. And what we'd done, we'd kept a log of her like feeding, you know, just in case Emma like wants to have a sleep, then I'm there, or vice versa, you know.
Seeing the themes,
yeah, just so we know what page we're on, you know, just it's easier then. Anyone can just look at it, right? Yeah. We know where we're at. And we didn't even write down on there, not taken to the breast, you know, looks groggy, you know, don't really see myself.
Right.
And we mentioned this to the healthcare woman that came out on the Friday. And they weighed Olivia, and she couldn't believe how much weight she'd put on. She was really, really, you know, positive. Emma was, you know, again, we wasn't stressing to the woman, but at the same time, we was, you know, vocal to say, are you sure we're okay? Like, are you sure she's all right? She's not been on the breastfeeding. She seems groggy. And she said, to keep with the NG tubes, and things like that. And we asked about the cardiology scan, and she said, you might hear something over the weekend, but I can't tell you that as a definite. And yeah, on the Saturday morning, she was on. So Emma did the Emma did 6 o'clock feed, okay, or 5 o'clock feed, because she was on 3 hour at the time. So I did the, I was up then and did the 8. You know, it was normal, little routine, changed nappy.
Yeah.
You know, just had her on me, fed her.
Yeah.
She seemed fine.
Yeah.
She was on my chest, just laying in bed. Well, I was sat up like on an angle. She was on my chest like on kangaroo care.
Yeah.
Because she was telling us about that no end, like in the hospital, like, you know, it's really good. And yeah, she was on me, and Emma got up at 10 to 10 and went to the toilet and came in and just panicked. Really. Well, not panicked, but I just seen on her face, she just said, something's not right. Something's not right. And I was like, what do you mean? I thought she was just chilling, you know. I couldn't feel anything, and, well, out of the ordinary anyway. You know, I just thought she was just chilling on me. Yeah, that's when shit hit the fan, really. Emma was like, something's wrong with her. She grabbed Olivia off me. Couldn't really see her chest moving up and down and things. She was like, I can't remember what she called it. Is it aspirated breath?
Mm.
You know, you just like trying to do that. So she got baby girl off straight away, just see the chest and things, and then just started CPR.
Oh my God.
She had to. So I was ringing, I rang 999. All the kids were in the house, you know. It was awful, to be honest. It was really, really bad place. So I was on the phone to the ambulance. I'd WhatsApp my sister because she was around the corner. She was midwife.
Yeah.
She got straight round. Ambulance was there within, I think it was there within 7-8 minutes. It was quick, don't get me wrong, but you know, at the time it's like 7 hours.
It's not quick enough, is it? Yeah.
Debating whether to put them in the car and go in the car. Yeah, it was just horrible. But then the ambulance turned up and, you know, rushed up. And then that was stressful because they were trying to take over from Emma from the CPR. There was a really young paramedic that came out to us, and I've, you know, Emma's said it often, and I've thought about it as well, but she just froze, like
the paramedic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Didn't know what to do, like actually about crying, and just because just went panic set in, I think. And they was trying to rip bags open, and sister trying to get bags open, you know, for the mask.
Yeah, yeah.
None of the masks was fit because they had adult masks. He didn't even have a child's mask. That would have been too big. But so it was just panic stations then. Like, Emma's still sat there because the paramedics could see Emma was coping all right with it. And then another doctor came in, flying up the stairs, and just grabbed hold of Olivia, ran into the ambulance, and just tried to, you know, get a breathe in. Well, I think what had happened was she had stopped breathing. Emma was doing the CPR and got her heart going again.
Right.
Yeah, then it was just the madness then of getting to the hospital.
Oh, God.
And driving behind that ambulance was, I'll be honest, probably one of the worst things. I know Olivia's like passed away, but, you know, like that was horrendous. Because we pulled over, pulled up on the side of the road for like 10 minutes. I didn't have a clue what was going on.
Yeah.
Like, I was sat in the car, I was trying to ring Emma, I was like, what's going on? But basically, they were just trying to put some wires or some leads or tubes or something into Olivia for whatever reason to help her. And yeah, and then we arrived at the Leicester Royal, and I've never been in that side of the hospital and I don't ever want to be in there again. But it, all I can explain, it just looked like, my mum used to watch Casualty in that.
Right.
And just like seeing the scene out of Casualty, there was honestly about 30 odd people all around a bed, and it was just trying to treat her. And we was taken into another room then. And then it was just like, that was it, just hounded with the questions of the step by step. And then that was it. Do you know what I mean? It was constant. And she had to go for some scans to check like what was going on. And so then me and Emma and sisters, we went up, had a cup of tea while we're waiting for them. And then, yeah, we got called through to the room where Olivia was. And the doctor just said to us then, like, there's nothing, we can't do anything. Like, too, she's the brain, like basically got brain damage. And so I think we had then about half an hour, I think, to, you know, just chill with her, like, hold her and just like, let her go. One thing that's hard, it's hard to explain when you're speaking to certain people what happens, because obviously you're speaking to police and paramedics and things like that, you've got to try and be like real on point with things. And then when you speak to like family members, they want to know the details. Then you speak to like a friend, and you've by this point you've like dumbed it down so much.
Good point. So Dan, you made this point, and we've about telling your story over and over again, and that like it's completely the other end of the scale as such. But Dan has said about like when you go on a holiday, for example, like you come back and by the time the fifth person asks, like, yeah, it was sunny.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, basically.
Pretty much. Like, because you don't want to keep going into detail. And like, and I know it's completely the other end of the scale, but it is that.
But as an analogy.
It's an analogy. And it's like, it is. It's just, I imagine it's exhausting. And thank you for coming on here, because I imagine it's exhausting just going across that again, right?
Absolutely. You know, part of me wants to come on here, just, you know, there's blokes out there and women, obviously, that have lost kids, but it's hard, like, to speak about it, isn't it? You know, it's hard.
But you're doing it.
Do you speak often or much? Seeing as we touched on that, I'm going to go down the friends route. Because like we're saying, we're doing an episode here where it's just the guys.
Yeah.
And playing up again to the reason why we started it and those stereotypes, which obviously are stereotypes, but, you know, they come into existence because there must be enough of a theme for them to have a slight truth to it. So what are you like as a with talker? Are you closed up? Could you speak? Do you show emotion?
I do show emotion, but at the same time, it was dependent on the setting, who was there.
Yeah.
Not because I was afraid to be emotionally in that way, but often, you know, making sure others are all right and going through it, you know, because can't take the burden off anyone else's emotion, but at the same time, if I can like be that strong one in the room, for instance, then I will. No, I struggle, like really struggle, to be fair.
I think it's good. You have to be that honest with yourself, though, don't you? In order to tackle it.
I'll be honest, you know, I had a decision to make. I just started my mentoring business. You know, I just signed up my first three mentees, clients, whatever you want to describe them as, and then Olivia died that week.
Oh, God.
So,
yeah.
It was whirlwind. Mm. You know, it was whirlwind because I was stuck. I was like, oh my God, I've got responsibilities. You know, I've got people.
Especially as you work for yourself, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. You know.
So you've got a lot on your plate because you've got that. You're working for yourself. You have other children already.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing their ages, they were pretty young at the, you know, still pretty young. So you've still got to be dad.
Yeah,
still got to be daddy. Still got to go home, be silly.
Yeah.
And just trying to deal with all of that and that mental burden and figuring out, and obviously as we're getting into with the ongoing investigations afterwards.
Yeah.
Wow. It's a lot to take in that. So.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I'll be honest as well. Like, I don't feel like, you know, I've spoken to a few people.
Do your friends ask you about things? Are they like, sorry to put in?
Certain do, but...
Because it's a bit of an elephant in the room, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot don't. I felt like it was, to start with, friends wouldn't say anything. It'd be me bringing it up. Because I think that they felt like if they brought it up, could you know, like break down or
was there a good time
or whatever? Yeah, you know, and it, as well at the time, you know, afterwards, it seemed like three or four of my mates was also getting pregnant as well, and they was in a position where they couldn't come up to me and say, "Oh, we're expecting a baby." You know,
always seems the way, doesn't it?
Yeah, and they didn't want to have put that emotional burden on me as such. But
people don't say anything for fear of saying the wrong thing and end up saying nothing and you become more and more isolated it comes up a lot, that theme, doesn't it?
Do you think that the experience that you have had, whilst it will always be a scar in you, because I always, whenever I speak to my clients, I always sort of say that everybody somewhere on their body has got a scar and there's a story behind that scar.
Yeah.
So you might have been kicked in football, you might have broken a leg, whatever that may be. But the difference with this type of scar is it's embedded in there.
Yeah.
So you're walking around with this scar that people can't see.
Yeah.
But to go through something like that as well with your own daughter and seeing your Emma, your partner, giving CPR and the whirlwind of whatever's going on in that room at that time, where does that leave you in terms of post-traumatic stress?
I'll be honest, the hardest thing I've dealt with since is, is like flashbacks.
Yeah.
That's what I struggle
you're
with.
You're back in that room again.
The flashbacks I get that are vivid are, am I giving the CPR?
Yeah.
My sister's reaction in the room, following the ambulance, because I see an ambulance now and it gets me, bad, like really bad.
Of course.
Wow. Especially behind it.
Yeah.
And
you know, especially when you see people not getting out of the way for them.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, seeing her after she passed, because we had to go back because the police were at our house looking after the kids.
Yeah,
you know, they couldn't say anything to the kids, and we had the kids ringing us to make sure it was all right. We couldn't say anything. We didn't want to tell them over the phone. So yeah, it was, yeah.
Did you? Because obviously, still with the, you know, fairly recently, isn't it? But we ask a lot of the guests about ways of coping and how you go about it, and we call them distractions, don't we?
And yeah, and I want to add something into here as well. So talking about the coping and the distraction and stuff, how, what have you done about being put into that situation?
Well, I had a decision: you either sink or you swim. Genuinely, you know, swam before, so I had to keep swimming. So basically, that's how I use it.
I was toying then, going, "Is now a wrong moment to say that's because you swam, wasn't it?"
Yeah.
But do you think at the same time that, yeah, because I get you, you sink, it's fight or flight, sink or swim, whatever it may be, whatever terminology we want to use. Does it not worry you that in future, if you don't deal with that professionally, and I say professionally, I mean by seeing a doctor or a psychiatrist, somebody that can deal with flashbacks.
Yeah.
Or, and this is going to sound like a really stupid question, or do you rely on those flashbacks to remember her?
No. So what is, I'll tell you what, I always had my phone out when Olivia was born. Always taking photos, right? I feel lucky now because I've got 1,800 photos of my daughter. Okay. She was alive for 6 weeks. You know, it might be a lot of photos with people, but to me, it's not enough.
Yeah.
I kept getting that comment, put your phone away, enjoy her. But I'm enjoying it, but I can still take a photo.
Do you know
what I mean? For me, it's a milestone getting to here.
Yeah.
I mean, so we was... So, you know, in hindsight, it's the best thing that I did. Yeah, in regards to that, I'd say... Sorry, what was the question?
About, like, getting professional support to help you with those flashbacks.
Yeah, so I tried that. I did try, not flashback specific, but I tried. We got put in touch with Bodie Hodgins for counselling and things like that. But again, it didn't suit me.
Was that the two of you, or was it just you?
Both of us. We went in separate.
Right, okay.
Emma had her counselling, I had mine.
Right.
Just wasn't a good experience for me. You know, I'm not got anything against Bodie Hodges.
How many sessions, out of curiosity, because often I wonder if it's, could that have just been the person that you were having the conversation 100%, with?
100%. That's what it was. But it put me off.
How
he was going about things.
Right.
It seemed like he was just all about the job role and making sure his timeline wasn't affected from anything that my timings or anything.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, it felt like if I wasn't there, then I was on warnings of, you've got this money left. If you don't turn up, you don't call.
It's a bit soulless, isn't it?
It was. And it put me off. I'll be honest. It put me off. And I sat down my first time and, you know, he turned around to me and he was like, right, we've got a 45-50 minute session.
So they're just looking after their interests more, that's more so
Basically,
looking after you.
I'm not going to prompt you, just tell me what's going on. And I just felt really uncomfortable, to be honest. I just thought...
Yeah, that's not cool.
I'm struggling with telling people what's going on.
Yeah, that's not cool.
And I don't really, you know, I wanted to felt like I was in a safe space and...
Sorry to jump in and interrupt. And that's why, when I say quite often than not, is bereaved parents don't necessarily need counselling.
Yeah.
They just want to speak to somebody that is reading off the same hymn sheet or has walked the same journey. Maybe not in terms of the actual, you know, experiences that you've had yourself in comparison to somebody else, but the main end, the end result effectively is we've all lost a baby.
Yeah.
Whether that be in the way that you have or the way that I have or the way that somebody else has. And it's understanding that okay, yeah, you might go to something like what we do, the baby loss support service, and you might only have a 50-minute session, but it doesn't mean that in that 50 minutes we've got to tick a list and say, right, he's done this, he's done this, he's done this, he's done this, because life doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
And that's why I always say, you know, you don't necessarily need counselling, you just want to speak to somebody who knows what you're going through and understands it.
Have a conversation that's organic, isn't it? And it's
exactly,
real. And
yeah.
I think sometimes, as you've mentioned, sometimes even better speaking to someone who's had that shared experience opposed to someone who's qualified to speak about it, but they haven't been through it themselves.
We've always said, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And I saw something else after that, which actually I thought was brilliant, and I'd never heard it before, and that is, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. But what you can do is you can feed it salt and make it thirsty. And do you know what? When you think about it, if you are in the correct place... Yeah.
Sorry, say that again.
So you can lead a horse to water,
yeah,
but you can't make it drink. Right, but you can feed it salt and make it thirsty. So if you ask,
if you can't make it drink, how can you feed it salt?
Isn't he a bell? He's such a bell end sometimes. Anyway, like,
you know, inquisitive.
Yeah, you're right.
You're not
but
inquisitive.
What I'm trying to say is if you and what I mean by feeding it, you're a knob. Yeah. What I mean by feeding it salt is if you ask the right questions, and you show the empathy, or you show an interest in somebody's story, or you want to know about X, Y, and Z, you're effectively then getting them to open up.
Hopefully.
Yeah, yeah, no. I'm being an idiot, but that makes sense.
Hopefully you're guiding them.
You're guiding them in
a way that
you're not forcing them.
You're presenting an opportunity to open up, knowing that opportunity's there when you're ready to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And it's not always for everyone, as we said, but I'm sure Ryan does it with his clients. I try and do it with mine in that, you know, it is literally that guide. You know, it's not us telling anyone how to feel or how to, you know, deal with this. We're just there hopefully to use the bit of experience that we've got through our losses to then hopefully guide people through their loss.
But also the difficult thing as well is, like you were saying, you go in and you have your appointment with said person, whoever it may be, and they say, you've got this 45 minutes, 50 minutes, off you go. It's like, hang on a second. It's like, I'm here because I'm potentially struggling to open up.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm here because I want to open up.
Put you under pressure straight away. Yeah, it's not, exactly. I don't think that's conducive to going down the right route you need for the conversation. Has that put you off forever now? Is it something, because you alluded to it, or just maybe...
It's put me off.
Yeah.
Just... I get that it's just that one person, but for me, you know, it sort of hardens you to...
It puts the barrier up, something like that, right?
100%, but at the same time, you know, losing a child, it like you said earlier about you lose that thing, a certain thing of you, 100%, you lose something inside of you, and it's changed me 100%, you know. I wish Olivia was here, but I feel like it has changed me for the better, in a sense, because... take no shit now, to be honest.
There we go.
Generally.
There we go. You know,
we hear that a lot, don't we?
Generally.
Bullshit having to change, right?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. You know, I hear people all the time just make an excuse for not doing something, putting something off, but they want to change their life for the better. Go and do it. And don't moan about it because you're here at 5 o'clock. You know what I mean? Just find a way and crack on. You know, that's what...
That change in perspective that we hear of so many fathers and mums, but after that loss, which is now that tolerance level of things, that just the little shit, isn't it?
That's why I left teaching.
Yeah, I remember you saying.
There were people that I was working with where their job was just absolutely everything. They were in at 6 o'clock in the morning and they were leaving at 8 o'clock at night because they had no responsibility at home and stuff. And then they're trying to palm it off onto people who have had life experiences that you wouldn't even wish on these bellends.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Making you feel guilty about not doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
So listen, you do you, right?
Yeah.
I'll do me as long as we get the job done.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm keen to ask this, Liam, and I've been thinking about this probably from the start. And it's a question that, you know, I feel like I'd like to ask just to see your thoughts on it. You've got two boys yourself, right? Did it hurt more that you lost the girl?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, it did. Because
we're all daddies of daughters here, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And yeah.
Always wanted a girl.
Yeah.
Generally, always wanted a girl. But before I was with Emma, you know, I had my heart, my mind was set on not even going to have another relationship. I don't want any more kids, nothing. I was generally, that's my mindset.
Yeah.
And then when me and Emma got together, it was great. And yeah, and when we found out we was having a girl, brilliant, you know, absolutely brilliant. But yeah, it did hurt a lot.
And I've seen you, is that your tattoo?
Yeah,
there?
Yeah.
Love that.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Do you know what?
Olivia's name, yeah.
See it.
Yeah.
It fucking destroyed me, losing a girl.
Oh, mate. Yeah, Callie, yeah. Just honestly,
all the little things. I said it on when it was a funeral, like at the eulogy, you know, it's just like the things that you ain't going to do with her now, you know, like walk down the aisle, like, you know, just do her hair, just little things like that.
Smack
a
boyfriend.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But you know what? You say that, the walking down the aisle, like that's, I remember we stayed at Amy's mum and dad's for a good few weeks after, mainly for the reason that the house was like a florist.
Yeah, yeah.
And I didn't want to go back to the house that we brought knowing we were having another baby. So as far as I was concerned, that house could have just burnt down and it wouldn't have bothered me.
Yeah.
But I remember one day I just sat there in the living room and it just hit me. Oh shit, I'm not going to walk her down the aisle.
Yeah.
And I remember walking into Amy in the kitchen and saying that to her. I just burst into tears.
Yeah, yeah.
And that sounds so selfish that you sort of think that, oh, I'm not going to get to do what I want to do, sort of thing.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
That for me, something that's part of being a dad to a daughter, 100%. Isn't it?
It's not selfish at all.
I think as a dad, it's one of life's events that you think you're going
to
do, isn't it?
That's when you're just looking for another reason to beat yourself up because you can't fix it.
Exactly.
It's what you said about smacking the boy, hitting the boyfriend bit. It's like that when you say that, it comes into that bad boys bit, you know, but the scene from Bad Boys.
Yeah, at the door.
How old is you? You look 30. But that's what I wanted to get round to. I just thought, listen, you know, I'm sure that, are you finding out the sex of the new?
Yeah, we found out. So we're having a boy.
Okay. So we're having a boy. But I would imagine at this point, as long as he's healthy, he's healthy, right?
Absolutely.
But there is certainly a connection with the daughter, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but at the same time, when we found out we was having a boy, you know, like you say, you know, happy boy or girl.
Yeah.
Did want another girl.
Yeah.
Generally
I
did.
I can imagine.
But at the same time, some relief that it was a boy because I didn't want, me and Emma, because we didn't want to feel like Olivia was being replaced with another girl.
Mm. Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
No, absolutely.
I felt exactly the same.
100%.
You know, it's difficult. And, you know, I was going to say this as well, that I find it difficult, not with parents and the other kids, but how Olivia's passing has rolled into them from us as parents. You know what I mean? Like you say, with walking down the aisle, don't get me wrong, I'm still going to walk my stepdaughter down the aisle because, you know, she's as good as my daughter.
Yeah.
She's not got my blood, but she's as good as my daughter.
Yeah.
Same as the other boys. They're not blood, mine by blood, but generally.
They're your children, yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, do anything for them as I would like my own blood children. So I've still got that to look forward to, but at the same time, it's still that thing with Olivia, you know?
Mm. And you're allowed to feel that, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
No one can say anything different.
Yeah, of course.
Wow. This.
I think this, I just hearing the way you've described that, and I think as Dan said, like you've taken us there, haven't you?
Yeah.
You know, you've taken us to that moment. And I've only met you, an hour ago, but the way you described it, man, it's blown my mind just thinking about being in that moment.
Yeah,
just,
yeah.
Wow. And I know we've touched on the, obviously, where you're at mentally with it a bit, and with the flashbacks.
Yeah.
And if you don't mind, if I just delve into that a little bit more, because I think that if people, you know, someone listening who's feeling isolated, does it happen when you're on your own, or is it in, like, is there
anywhere.
A certain scenario? Oh, it's right.
Yeah, anywhere, any time of day. Doesn't matter.
Just out of nowhere.
Just comes.
And what do you do to, you said the picture we've got of you, you said was Dan by the canal, you said?
Yeah.
This is the picture on the episode, title for this episode.
Yeah, so we went, me and Emma, you know, we both just try and get out of the house, just go for a walk. Don't get me wrong, don't do it every day. Don't do it enough. But at the same time, Just get out. Just to get out, you know, kids at school, college.
Just how you process
change
that,
the scenery a bit,
trouble
right?
Trouble is at the minute, because everything's ongoing with the investigation into what happened, we've not got the clarity of how she died, actually. We've not been told that.
I was going to finish on this part,
so we've not got the death certificate or anything
what?
Like that.
Can you tell us about? Okay. Or is there like so? That's just where it's at the moment. There's that the closure's there. There's no clarity, and there's information that's missing. So
basically, there was a big investigation going on. It's called a PSII, I think, patient safety investigation. It's where an external neonatal doctor came in, who chaired the meeting with all the people involved, but. All I can say is that from his findings, she shouldn't have been discharged.
So I did wonder, like, when they said discharging, because what week was that when they discharged?
So she would have been about 35 weeks.
Is that is that unusual, right?
Like, I think if they're medically fit to be discharged, then, you know, like,
would it enough?
I think Bobby was 36 weeks.
We were 36.
She was born at 32. Yeah, about 36 weeks.
Yeah, it was around that time.
Okay. So, okay. Right.
Yeah. So again, for us, that's been difficult. It's been ongoing. So we don't know. We've had to, send in questions for us to be answered on our behalf. And
I guess there's so many what ifs.
Yeah,
well,
exactly.
Right?
Well, it's not. Yeah.
Even what ifs as such. But
the trouble is, we've just not had the answers. Yeah, you know, we've not had no answers, no clarity. It's been
any indication as to when, like the time frame.
Well, it was supposed to be December. This meeting was supposed to go ahead, and then we've got an email to say a week later to say that the meeting didn't go ahead.
December back in the last
last year,
24.
So there was going to rearrange. So they rearranged it at the meeting. But again, just the communication from when she passed away and the people was dealing with, it was just shocking.
Right.
So like, I can't go into it too much, but I
get you.
Shit. You know, it's come into our house and tell us this is our plan. You know, every 2 weeks we're letting know, even if nothing's happened. Mm. You know, numerous times. And so anyway, we've had to write an email last week and, you know, get higher up people involved, which we shouldn't have to do. But the reason being, we was at we was having a cardio scan on the new baby, and they didn't have no notes from Olivia, nothing, no details from Olivia, because this certain area within the hospital are keeping hold of the notes because of the investigation. But Emma was sat there, we was nervous, scared, you know, tears, like nervous, checking the heart. And she was sat there on the phone having to go through all her emails to find the post-mortem to tell the cardiologist the holes of the heart diameters and things. And it was just like, you know, it blows my mind. Like,
yeah,
well, I was frustrated, to be honest. I was like,
thing is, Liam, it's just something you shouldn't have to do
exactly
and go through mentally as well, right? Yeah. Because you've talked about flashbacks to us, but I imagine that it's just a rolling thing, isn't it? You know, you're having to go through stuff over and over again, and it's like, man, like,
and I would also imagine, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, I would also imagine because that happened at home, you've had to do police interviews
so we actually get on, so we get the report back on Tuesday.
Okay,
we've been given the date of Tuesday. And we also get back the things that the police took from the scene. It was, you know, scene of a crime is such for them hours. And it was treated, you know, we got back and we had to sign the form to go upstairs. It was crazy, crazy, you know, like you feel like we've done something wrong.
Yeah. You feel like a criminal, imagine.
Yeah, 100%. You know, we had to have like all blood tests and that and things when we got back. And yeah, that's fine. We're not.
It's weird, isn't it? They've got to do their job, but you still can't help feeling like.
But at the same time, you're just like, look, I need to get back. You know what I mean? I want to go and dress her. So she's dressed and, you know, and, but yeah, so we get them on Tuesday and we get all the things back on Tuesday as well. But again, within that is the feed in document that we put in.
Yeah.
Just for peace of mind, we know we've got it, but.
Well, we. please keep us informed. Yeah. And if you'd like to come on, and maybe when there is a bit more you want to reveal about that.
Yeah, we'll have you back, I think.
There's, I'll put the links in the description for this. There's a couple of previous episodes. It was Tom Hender that has done a couple of episodes, and also Chris and Kerry Watson, and with their own legal battles, which I believe still ongoing also, as far as I'm aware. So there, for anyone listening who, you know, because you're going through this shit storm, but and on top of it, you've got some legal stuff to work through.
Yeah.
And because why would you even know anything in the first place about, you know, any of these resources? Like I say, the links are in the description for that. Go ahead.
I was going to say, as much as obviously you just started your business at that point, did it help to a point having your business to kind of throw you, like, I imagine you had to almost like throw yourself into it a little
bit. Yeah, basically.
It's like, say, sink or swim, wasn't it?
Literally. I had no choice, mate. Listen, you look out the window, sun goes up, sun goes down.
Right.
It carries on, right?
Did you do like the guy thing, you just threw yourself into it, or was there any other like distractions?
Literally no choice, innit? Yeah, I had to. And obviously, again, with what I do, it's a lot of social media presence and putting out reels and posts and, you know, informative posts and things like that.
And I guess you're clients are relying on you.
Yeah. So that was hard in itself, the mindset of having to
get
in front of the camera and things like that. You know, but again, just got on with it, cracked on, and it's helped me. It has helped me. But at the same time, you know, I'm not fearful of it because I'm aware of it. But at the same time, you know, just aware when it's all done with and the investigation's done. That I think that's the point there mainly, that for me and Emma. Because we've not grieved. And I get it's
almost
not,
like it's put on hold.
Yeah, basically. Which I hope it isn't like heightened. You know, I just hope we can carry on as it is. You know,
it's horrible.
I don't know how else to put it. You know, it's difficult.
Was there any other? Are there any other? Like we say, the distractions. I guess with the work thing, it's almost like a gift and a curse because you've got to get into it. You throw yourself into it. There's some which are maybe not so good, which I've had guests talk about in the past, whether that's, you know, indulging too much in shutting themselves off, isolating, not talking, drinking, gambling, whatever. Is there any other ways that you've been mentally trying to handle?
No, I've just kept myself to myself, doing my business and close family, really. It's just kept myself with people that I want to be around rather than people I don't want to be around. Yeah. That's why I say I haven't got the time for it. Generally not got the time for it.
It's so simple, isn't it? The way you put it.
It's true.
That.
It is.
Family, don't take shit and be,
You can't be bothered with people now. Like,
no, I can't. I've even got family members that are fake, mate. I can't be doing it. You know what I mean? There's no point.
Yeah. Because as you said, I love it. No, it's true, right?
I'll tell you something. I wish I'd done that a lot earlier than what I did.
100%.
Do that. There were friends that I fell out with over the years. That probably we drifted apart because of differing opinions and things like that. And I do wish that a lot earlier I'd have just turned around and done that.
Just drop them a message now.
I'm better at it now. But Ryan's right. I'm the same. I wish I'd got there a lot quicker. Yeah. But.
And that's what I mean by it's good to come on and talk about these things because you realise that...
And you learn off other people.
Yeah.
And you almost feel like when you hear other people talk about it, you feel like, oh, it's all right what I've done.
It's like you've been given permission.
And I think, you know, you don't take any nonsense. Mm. Actually, I'd like to see an argument. I'd like to see an argument between our Ryan and you. There's a lot of similarities here. Ryan don't take fools gladly either.
Yeah. I can imagine we'd both probably just stand there and go, fuck this, let's go and get a beer.
Probably.
And a beautiful friendship blossoms from there.
That is true, man.
Liam, thank you so much for joining us. It's always an awkward thing to say, but coming on this, were you apprehensive about it and how are you feeling now we're done?
Well, to start with, when I first reached out to you guys, I was buzzing because for me, it was just like, this has probably been my way of talking about it.
Yeah.
Genuinely. But then on the way out, I'll shit myself. Genuinely, I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? What am I going to say?
I'll shit myself before we come in here every week.
Brilliant. I've
Matt just shits himself.
I've only just started talking about it like openly on my own socials, you know. Yeah. So again,
at the end of the day, you have to start somewhere.
It
doesn't matter where you start. As soon as you start talking, you eventually get there.
Yeah, definitely.
To be able to just share. And personally, I would say you don't come across as somebody that's only just started talking about it.
No, right? Exactly. Yeah.
Because you've told your story with a lot of dignity.
Yeah.
You've obviously been through a fucking shit storm and are still going through a shit storm that hopefully, fingers crossed, is going to come to an end.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah.
To enable you to grieve properly and you know, move forward. Obviously, not forgetting, but move forward.
Yeah, yeah.
After all this shit show that's going on behind you.
And yeah, I'm really absolutely. Glad that you've got so many photos of her.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
It's amazing.
Same there, mate.
Honestly, man, it's amazing. And it, again, just to touch on that as a bereaved parent, those photos, they're so valuable. Like, I give Callie a kiss. Callie's my daughter, who we lost every morning, every night. Right, you know, just little. Right, she's got a photo of her on our stairs, and I think you underestimate it sometimes. But how important those photos are, it is because that is all you've got.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right, that's what you've got, and it's amazing. It is wonderful. It really is, and I'm so pleased that you've got that. So many, and as you said, you took so many photos. Bright, it's great. It's amazing. It is.
Yeah, definitely.
Just look after your phone.
Back them up to the cloud.
Absolutely, right. You know?
Thank you so much.
I appreciate it.
Wonderful, mate.
And like I say, if you ever want to come back, whether it's for a full episode or if you just want to jump on for someone else's or at any point, we would love to have you back. And that goes for anyone who's been on or anyone who's listening, maybe for the first time and you'd like to come on. We do this for you. It's completely how we can make you feel at your most comfortable, whether you want to do it live, recorded in this room with us or far, far away from us in your own room somewhere. And just get in touch. Like I say, details are all in the description for this. Liam? Thank you very much for joining us. Take care. And I love everything about you, apart from the team that you support.
So it's a Leicester fan.
Yes. Ryan and Matt.
Adios.
Catch you in a bit.
Thank you so much.
This has been the Still Parents Podcast, supported by Globals. Make some noise. And we will be back very, very soon. Take care.
The Still Parents Podcast is proudly supported by Globals. Make some noise. Click details in the description to find out more.